your turn to be afraid.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.
Thank you very much for joining us here on Nerds from the Crypt, the podcast where we review your favorite and sometimes not so favorite horror movie. We also interview horror creators about their upcoming and ongoing horror projects. Since we came back from our hiatus, we have been trying to get a steady flow of episodes out for you. We recently had interviews with Ms. Eviana Snow and Mr. Ambrose Stoliker. If you have not heard those, we would recommend that you go back and listen to those as soon as you finish this episode. Today, we're going to have another great interview set up for y'all. Joining us from our great neighbor from the north, Mr. Nick O'Gorman. How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're doing good. We're doing good. I'm just excited about going ahead and talking to you, get to know a little bit more about you and get to know more about your project. For those who do not know you, would you kindly go ahead and introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, for sure, man. So I'm a comic creator. I write, draw, color, do everything pretty much. And I've done it for a lot of different places. I was born in Germany and I moved to BC. So I grew up out in like near Vancouver. And then when I graduated high school, I moved out to Ottawa. So I've been here for about, a long time now, like 14 years, I think. So it's been, just in the nation's capital. So when I was out in BC still as a high school student, I always wanted to be a comic artist, but I originally got my start in doing some storyboarding and stuff like that for the film industry out there. And while that pays really good, it wasn't something I was very passionate about. So no one gets to see your work. So it's just like you and the director, and it's just drawing comics is a lot funner, but uses the same skill set, and so it doesn't pay as well, but it's a lot more fun.
And as far as horror, have you always been into horror?
Oh, hell yeah, man. Yeah, lifelong horror fan. Reading it, I've been a big fan of like a lot of the lit, the movies. Like I one of the first movies I ever saw was like Evil Dead. It's like burned into my mind. It was funny, the first time I ever showed my wife The Shining, which is one of my favorite movies, like we had to stop halfway because I was just too into it. Like listen to this noise, listen to the, like, yeah, just fanboying out. So she's like, I'm going to finish this without you. But yeah, lifelong horror fan.
So what is, I guess you said The Shining's your favorite movie. Do you have a favorite book or author?
Well, yeah, like Lovecraft has been like my go-to. Like I think I got my first collection of Lovecraft stuff when I was like maybe like 12 or so. And it's ever since then, I've just like been voraciously like reading and rereading his stuff. I absolutely love like his writing. The whole idea of like the unseen horror, the cosmic terror stuff. Just a lot of that.
That terror that, what's it called, is so undescribable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, everyone kind of sees it different.
Yeah, and just like this kind of like staring into the void, like this nihilistic kind of realization of just how small our plights are.
Yeah, a large majority of the interviews that we conduct for this show, I would say at least 95% of them have said H.P. Lovecraft has been an inspiration. I think it's very hard not to. To at least be inspired, even if you don't know you're be inspired by H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah, he definitely influenced a lot of people and stuff. Like, growing up, I also read, like, a lot of Stephen King, but, like, his books are really hit or miss for me, so.
Yeah, he's the second one that most people bring up.
Yeah, well, especially, like, I'm a big fan of, like, short horror fiction, too, so, and short horror, or short sci-fi as well, but, so King's short fiction leaves a lot to be desired for the most part.
I'm just like, oh, come on, I wanted more. Why'd you just leave me with this?
Yeah,
now it's just in my brain.
Yeah, for like every like Dolan's Cadillac, there's like a teeth, you know?
Oh, it's good. All right, so we are here to talk about your Kickstarter campaign. I actually ran into it yesterday and reached out right away. HBO Volume 1. We're still about 20 days to go as of the day of the recording, and good to see that you already hit your goal. But do you want to just go ahead and introduce us to what the project's all about?
Yeah, for sure, man. So this is like a long project that I've been working on, and it's going to go on for a lot longer. So the idea is that every year I go look back to what H.P. Lovecraft published 100 years beforehand, and I choose something from that year, and I do it over the course of that year, and then kind of come up with it on its anniversary. So initially it started with his first book, the first short that he ever published, which was Beyond the Wall of Sleep, which is like one of my favorites by him. So that was 2018 that I did that one. So I kickstarted that one, started building my audience with that. And that one was a lot of fun. That book was that one especially has a lot of stuff that's like undrawable, like as far as like when he's describing like phantasmal vistas of like dreamscapes and stuff like that. So like that one was going to be a blast to give it a visual language. Because like, yeah, it doesn't really get into the nitty gritty of description of a lot of stuff. So trying to like translate that into images was a lot of fun. And it's kind of like something that's missing in a lot of adaptations is like making things suit the like the comics medium. So that that was an effort in trying to like give a kind of language to the whole thing visually. So after that one, I did HPL 1920. I couldn't really decide on a single story that year to adapt, so I adapted three different shorts. And so I did like Cats of Ulthar for that, Statement of Randolph Carter, and The Doom That Came to Sarnath. Sarnath is a lot of fun because it's kind of like the most like Conan the Barbarian kind of story he's got. So it was a lot different. That's cool. And I got to draw some like lizard people getting hacked up by barbarians. Nice. And then after that one, I did Music Eric Zahn, which was another really fun one to draw. Like that story is a lot of fun. And then most recently, 2 months ago, I came out with my adaptation of Herbert West Reanimator, which is the longest one to date. That thing ended up being about 60 pages, and it was a lot of effort.
Also, at least from the people that I've talked to in for this podcast, other than Cthulhu, probably Reanimator's the one that's brought up the most.
Yeah, it's so funny like that a lot of people are like aware of it, but I think most people who aren't like avid Lovecraft fans are just aware of like the 80s movie, which was a lot of fun for sure, but quite different.
Oh yeah, yeah. What I wanted to ask you is, are you going in and trying to adapt these as close as possible, or are you trying to inject some of your own stuff into it as well?
For the most part, I like adhere pretty damn close to the initial like or the stories themselves for sure. I make like small changes here and there. For example, like in Beyond the Wall of Sleep, the main character in that one is a doctor at an asylum kind of thing, and like the only change in that story is that I made her a woman, like the character a woman, because like there is not a single female character in most of Lovecraft stuff.
Yeah.
So like looking forward into the other stuff I was going to adapt, I was like, well, I like this changing her to a woman was not going to do much other than just, you know, make it especially for like the dream sequence stuff. I kind of play with size and scale, and her being kind of a diminutive woman compared to the big hillbilly kind of thing is it was more interesting visually for sure. But I do stay pretty true to the like the original stories.
So this is a collection of the previous stuff that you've done.
Yeah, yeah, it's a collection of the first four. The project is going to go, so I'm going to continue on to the point where I hit Mountains of Madness. So I've got another volume at least of stories coming up, and then I'll be doing a graphic novel of Mountains of Madness.
That's going to be a pretty beefy one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, like when I undertook this project, like I was looking at it's going to be about 10 years before I get to Mountains of Madness, and then that will be the end of the project.
From a standpoint of production wise, and if each one of these takes about a year roughly, I mean, how long are you giving yourself to do Mountains of Madness? Are you doing that also in a year?
It depends. If I am able to hire a colorist, which is a dream, then I'll be able to do it in a year for sure. But when you're the one like writing, drawing, coloring, and doing everything, it's a lot of work. And coloring is just, it's like the most grueling thing that I can think of in comics for me personally. I'd rather just be drawing the next page and telling my story, but I get bogged down with having to color the really intricate line work that I do.
That's going to be that. Yeah. Like I said, that's a beefy story. And that's a pretty aggressive timeline to try to hit by yourself. That's cool though. I think, if you could do it, that'd be awesome.
For sure. My next one coming out is I'll be launching after I get this all the HBL volume one shipped out. I'll be launching it. It's about a third done so far, and it's going to be Rats in the Walls. And I think I'm really excited for this one. This is the most work I've kind of put into breaking down the story yet. So I think it's definitely going to be the most payoff as far as the adaptations go.
So how many pages is this going to end up being?
The collection is 160 pages. So it's all the work I've done so far. And then I've got some additional stuff in there too. On top of doing Lovecraft stories, I also did a adaptation of one of his poems. So that's going to be like the backup content for this one.
You're very well beyond the goal for the Kickstarter. Do you want to go over what people can get as rewards for pledging?
Yeah, for sure. So I have a lot of add-ons and other stuff. I have like a hardcover copy that's like an add-on tier. You can also get like a dust jacket, which I'm going to be like silk screening and everything. It's going to look really, really cool. I've got every year when I do my book, I come up with like at least two posters kind of thing. Usually one of the next story I'm going to do and then just another Lovecraft thing. So I have one tier, which just includes all the posters I've done up to this point. Let's see. I also have original art tiers are always popular. It's always a lot of fun. And yeah, I also do candles. I'm not sure if you saw the candles at all, but so every year I come out with each book, I do a different prayer candle with a different like elder god on it.
Oh yeah. I'm seeing it right now.
Your collection, so we'll...
Yeah. So yeah, they're pretty popular too. I sell a lot on my Etsy as well.
With a sort of biblically accurate looking angel. Kind of thing. anything else?
Trying to think offhand right now what I've got. I also like one of the add-ons you can also get is some of my other books are available too, just because I've got a big backstock. I'm like a one-person publisher, so I've got tons of stock and tons of other books available. I also do like art commissions where you can like as part of the tier get like either a painted commission or a black and white ink commission. So those are usually pretty popular too, and I always throw them together in my sketchbooks at the end of the year.
Getting off subject here, what's the most common or I guess popular commission that you get?
I get a lot of requests for Mountains of Madness, so it's a lot of fun because like people are paying me to pretty much do like pre-concept art for my eventual adaptation. So it's great.
They're helping you do your work.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Ahead of time. Yeah.
Like, oh, hold on, I really like this.
Do they normally stick to? I'm sorry, go ahead.
He's just compiling his workbook for later. He's like, oh, I really like this piece. Let me add this to the workbook for later. Do a scan of that one before I send it off.
Do people normally stay within the H.P. Lovecraft, or do they do other kind of out of bounds, but other kind of things that they ask for?
I've gotten more and more strict kind of as I go on and have built my audience about it. Mm-hmm. Usually I ask for like a Lovecraft related commission just because, you know, I can only draw your family member I've never met so many times before it gets really tedious. Most of it's that. Sometimes I get like tangentially Lovecraft related stuff. Last time there was like a Lovecraft RPG game, a Dexter something. So I got a commission to draw someone from that. But yeah, just generally Lovecraft or monster.
Other than the volumes for H.P. Lovecraft, is there anything that you have in mind for even further in the future?
As far as like other projects go and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've got tons of stuff like on the go. I just published like my first collection of sci-fi kids short stories last year, at the end of last year, with my character Gunpan. That one wasn't as big of a success as this one. So I probably won't be doing another one for a while, but it was a lot of fun to finally get that out there and have something for kids at my table when I table at conventions and stuff, because it's pretty like graphic and horror based up to this point. As far as future projects go, I've got like a graphic novel I've been kind of working on for a long time. And eventually once I have like enough kind of, pages and stuff, I'll probably end up getting that one out next. That one called Heart Attack Man. And I also have another kind of mech and kaiju kind of story I've been working on for like, I've got hundreds of character designs for it and I just need to kind of get to writing it. But yeah, so it's like a kind of alternate history mech versus kaiju kind of story.
Nice. I like kaiju.
Yeah, me too.
I'm hoping we get to see more information about Kong and Godzilla, or Godzilla and Kong.
Yeah, the Legendary Pictures stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was pretty disappointed with the last
what?
One.
What? I've heard that. Man. I loved it, but I've heard more because of the story or anything like that.
Yeah, I would just like I could watch like Destroy All Monsters like a billion times, and I'd much prefer that than watching King of Monsters again.
anything that we want to make sure to gloss over?
Yeah, so we are approaching our first stretch goal. This first stretch goal is 10,000. So I haven't, like, I just have them all grayed out, but we have a couple of different stretch goals, and we're definitely going to hit at least one. So the first one, it's going to be, I've been working on the art all week for it. It's the first, because of all the different stories in it, I have, like, kind of a montage, kind of Struzan-style montage piece of, like, the whole book in one kind of image, so... The first stretch goal, I'll announce it here, is like everyone's going to be getting a bookmark with it on it. So it's a killer piece of art.
And you're going to send everybody a jar with a head in it.
I would say a book of this size and material, you will probably need a bookmark. So you don't lose your place.
Yeah, for sure. I've sent one out. I had a 48 page book called Death Row Sorcerer, and I sent a bookmark with that. And I'm like, I'm not really sure it needs a bookmark, but this one definitely will.
I mean, if you're losing your mind while you're reading the book, you're gonna need one.
Yeah, and it'll be good for when the police come and investigate. They'll be like, oh, it was one. This one did it.
And who was that creator?
Let me ask you about your because you said you do the inks and the pencil inks and coloring.
Yeah, coloring, lettering, I do the preprint, I do everything. I ship it all out. Yeah, I actually kind of, it's like, yeah, I call it like boutique comics pretty much, where it's, I like silk screen all my envelopes, they look like the Necromonicon, so when you get a package from me, it's wild. I'll send you guys a photo, but yeah, like the amount of extras I throw in is also pretty crazy. So yeah, like Target Destroyed Comics, which is like my publishing imprint, it's like, yeah, boutique comics, you won't have an experience anywhere else like it.
And does anything influence your drawing style?
Yeah, like I've been drawing like my whole life. All I've wanted to do ever was being a comic artist. So I take inspiration from everywhere. Like, I'd say growing up, Mike Allred was a huge influence on me. And then, yeah, like Tony Moore, like you name it. Like I read tons of comics. As far as like inking, though, like I'm really into inking, and Wally Wood, of course, is like number one on that one. But yeah, like as far as like the psychedelic stuff, I look at a lot of old Ditko stuff. Ditko drew some wild stuff for someone who didn't do drugs.
Well, I was going to say that that first image that you have there, that Beyond the Wall of Sleep. It reminds me of what we've seen from the MCU in the Quantum Realm, but I think I've heard that the Quantum Realm is kind of based on like this Lovecraftian kind of feel.
Okay, yeah, is that like from the newest Strange movie?
I know for a fact that at least one of the monsters was inspired, but also like just the Quantum Realm for Ant-Man, where he goes in.
Oh, okay.
Like all this purplish, pinkish, and just...
Yeah, that's, like, the interesting thing with, like a lot of the Lovecraft stuff is, like, yeah, like, just finding, like, that visual language is neat, too, and, like, especially with the colors, like, I tried to make them pretty psychedelic and stuff like that, too, because you know, like it makes it, especially for comics, a little bit more electrifying. Mm-hmm. And then you have stories like Color Out of Space, which like I, as a comic artist, I'm not sure how I'd ever adapt that because it kind of requires a new color. So that one was one that I was fine with leaving as like the literature. That'll be one I don't touch.
There's actually I think it's Nick Cage that comes out in the newest one of adaptation of that one.
Yeah, it was a really cool adaptation. You can do stuff with film to make things look kind of like, but like just having a static color, yeah, not as cool.
Why not?
Well, you were talking about that, what's it called? The Music of Eric Zahn?
Yeah.
I've actually never heard of this story. Do you want to just elaborate a little bit on that one? Please.
Yeah, so that one's a lot of fun. So it involves this, it's one of the couple of Lovecraft stories that doesn't take place in America. So that one was kind of cool because the scenery is going to be a lot different. So it's about this guy, this metaphysics student, and he goes to France kind of to study. He's tenanted in a big old rickety building on this really creepy road. And it's this big tower of a building, and he and this other man are like one of the few residents in it. And the old man who lives above him is just constantly playing his viola at all hours of the night. And as the night kind of grows longer, it grows louder and more kind of like just crazy sounding scales and stuff that he could never explain. And throughout the course of the story, he kind of gets to know him. And the guy's like a deaf mute, so it was kind of hard to do that. But the story turns out that the music that this guy's creating is kind of keeping like an evil world from merging into our own kind of thing and encroaching into ours. I did change up that one a bit for the ending. I tried to make it a bit different because it kind of, yeah. So that one changed. I changed the ending slightly.
Okay.
have you read N, one of the short stories by Stephen King?
I have not.
Okay. Very similar to that, but it's a person with OCD who believes that if he doesn't do these rituals that he's going to let like these Lovecraftian beings into our world.
Okay, cool.
You do pretty much every step of the way here. Did you start off wanting to do all that, or did that come just like, I want to do this, so I need to learn to do that?
Yeah. So when I first started out in comics, I was just picking up whatever job I could. Like I had like the basics of like most kind of elements of it and just accepting like low paying jobs. And they've paid me to get like at a professional level for each of them. Like I've professionally lettered, colored, like inked, you name it. So at this point, yeah, it's just a collection of that. And the more successful I am, the more time I'll just be able to dedicate to just drawing and inking. And that's like, 'cause that's where my passion lies. Yeah. Yeah. Coloring, it's too painstaking. Like I do like, that's the other thing is like when I hire colorists, I am pretty choosy about stuff too. So I tend to flat the work myself. I'm not sure if you guys are aware of like the coloring process, but you have like your flat color and then you have like your like rendering color. So like the flat color, like I choose the palette because I think about color as I'm drawing, but I just don't like the process of color.
Gotcha. I respect that. You got your vision.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, you're as a creative person that does their, you know, you A through Z process, you're like in most of your projects and stuff like that, you're like, okay, this is my vision. This is what I see. This is how I want to see it. And then when you relinquish that to someone else for a moment, you're like, oh, but why would you choose that color?
Yeah, especially like when I was working on like other people's books before starting my imprint and stuff, like I accepted so many jobs because like they'd have a colorist color one of my pages that I turned in. And then I'd be like, well, how much are you paying this guy? I'll take that rate just so that they don't ruin my work. So yeah, I've done a lot of really like bottom of the barrel, dirt cheap coloring just so that someone else doesn't like wreck my art.
But you know, I mean, if you want to make sure it comes across clean and looks good, then I mean, obviously, I mean, I'm looking at the pieces that are up on the page that I'm looking at right now and they really pop. So it's not, even though you don't, it's not your passion, you totally know what you're doing because you can take something that's it's just like like a character on a page and make them have this luster to them or a skeleton glow. So it makes you just like, I want to touch this because it looks really cool.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Dan Schmidt, who was on the podcast well, 3 years ago, and he actually, if I remember correctly, he didn't really want to do all these other steps for the project, but he was so
focused.
Yeah, like he wanted to make it happen, so he just like took years to make sure that he learned every step. I'm like, man, that's a lot of dedication.
I heard part of his reasoning behind it was because he believed that if he could color really well and get it down and locked in, that it would keep creatures Beans. From the from coming into our world.
So. Yeah, it's a hard thing because like. Well, it's like nice to be have a multifaceted skill set when it comes to like what you can do with comics. It's also like at the same time at the back of your mind, you're like, well, what if I put all that time into drawing?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is what brought me here. Right. So I was thinking how much better at pencils would I be if I just strictly focused on that and had the ability to just like once a page is done, just send it into the wild and let someone
do their thing.
Do whatever they. Yeah.
And is this digital or do you do it by hand first and then make it digital? What is your process?
Yeah, so I really love brush inking and stuff like that. So I work traditionally up to the point of inks. So I ink traditionally and then I scan it and do the rest digitally. But it also avails me to have original art pages for sale, which is a good revenue source. I'll mm-hmm. probably never go digital just off of that. Okay,
people, if you're listening to this, this is the unicorn you want to back because He's doing the traditional hard work and then putting it into the computer to do the finish work. And I mean, if you follow our podcast and if you follow other podcasts about people doing this type of thing, I mean, not to diminish people that do things in digital realm because it's very technical, but
yeah, it's smarter and faster. Yeah,
it's smarter and faster. But he's got the process. It's like when you do math in math class and you write it all out and you've got the work to show as opposed to just doing it all in your head. And the teacher's like, oh, how'd you get there? And you're like, but it's in the computer. Here you go. He's got this nice page for you to take a look at a convention. And then you can say, I really like this page of awesome Cthulhu or Lovecraftian work. And I want to put it on my wall so that I can, make sure I clean my dishes at night and not let anybody in the house or something. But I mean,
into the world.
But that's the thing. I love that kind of thing. So props to you, sir.
Thanks, man.
I'm looking at these drawings, even, the black and white looks amazing. I used to be someone who didn't like black and white comics, but as I've actually met more people and get to see a little bit more of the differences between the inks and the finished coloring page, I feel like I've had a greater appreciation for the when it's just left black and white or just the inks, and there's so much detail that you might lose when you color over it.
Yeah, for sure. Just as a second announcement here, the second stretch goal is actually kind of an artist edition ash can of Beyond the Wall of Sleep. So if we can get to that funding goal, then I'll every physical backer will get this a copy of just the art for the Beyond the Wall of Sleep, in a just comic book size mm-hmm. kind of thing. And it'll just be mm-hmm. reproductions of the original art black and white pages. So that's the second stretch goal. So if we can get there, y'all get it.
Oh, awesome. And that's also a great way to see the process from one step to the next step.
Oh yeah. It helps you too. If anyone's interested in comic making, it's not just about appreciating the medium. You can learn a lot mm-hmm. by just looking at other people's kind of, work. When I got my first artist edition, it was mind blowing how thick some of Dave Mazzucchelli's lines were. on the page, because it's 17 by 11, but like some of those widths are just wild. So then I got a bit more free with my brush as far as what I was, you know, doing on the page.
And once this is funded, when is this expected to be released?
I've got the print file ready to go. So once I get that bag, I'll be shipping it off to the publisher, or to the printer immediately. And then it'll just be about getting, finding out how many soft covers, how many hard covers I need and stuff like that. But it should be going, definitely by, I'll have them shipped out by June.
Wow. That's pretty good. Getting out pretty quickly. Luckily we're getting back to normal, but closer to normal than it was a couple of years ago, where some of the people were talking to them, like, yeah, I don't know when this is gonna actually get back from the copiers because of just all the delays and COVID and all that.
Yeah, shipping prices went up drastically too, so that's that's like another thing that like really hurt, because before, when I was doing my Lovecraft adaptations, I'd with very little art, just kind of announce it, crowdfund it, and then do it over the course of the year. But with this book, from now on, I'm just going to make sure the book's done and ready to go, so that like delays, stuff like that, aren't a huge setback. Like during Reanimator, I broke my hand.
Oh, man.
So that put a bit of delay on there. I had to draw 11 pages with my left hand.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah. I'm not an artist, but I do a lot of drafting on the computer. If I broke my right arm, I do not know how I would be able to work.
Yeah, it was slow, but I got it done.
Wow.
Yeah, that's rough.
I won't say which pages, actually. I was going to mention which pages, but it's a segment of the book, and I don't think you can tell.
It's like finding the golden ticket.
Yeah, for sure.
Which one's the right hand, which one's the left hand?
For my Death Row Sorcerer book, I actually had just had a shoulder surgery for that. So I actually have one cover done with my left hand, one done with my right hand. And, I couldn't decide which one I like better. So I just have them both.
Oh, yeah. At least one more question here. Once this is off Kickstarter, is there any way for people to still place orders, or where can they go to place these orders?
For the hard copies of like the collected editions, I'm actually like doing like a bare minimum kind of print runs on them. I'm like barely ordering more than what I order off of Kickstarter. Okay. So like this is for right now. Anyways, the only plan is like just to do a very small print run here. Because I have like hundreds of copies of each of the single floppies. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to drown out the market for those and have all this back stock. So yeah, this is like pretty much a Kickstarter exclusive. So you have to get in on it now.
There you go. Do not miss out.
Don't sleep.
So, but you are, you said you have the single copies. Where can people get those if they miss out on the Kickstarter?
Yeah, so you can get those all on my Etsy. It's That Nico G on Etsy, and I have all my books there. You'll get the same like kind of cool envelopes. You'll get like the stickers and all the other bonus stuff I throw in. So that's the boutique shop.
I'll make sure to put the link in the description. But like I said, if you miss out on this, then definitely go and get it over there.
There.
Yeah.
And then are you doing, and you said you do shows and stuff too. So you doing comic conventions coming up, or?
Yeah, for sure. I've got one coming up in, I think it's May 19th, I think, offhand, in Ottawa. So if you're Ottawa, come on by and see it. I'm not sure if that picked up on the mic. Other than that, I really don't have anything planned. My wife's expecting this summer, so I didn't make any Comic-Con plans for this year. But if you have a time machine, you could have caught me at, you know, Montreal last year. You know.
Oh, that,
congratulations.
Congrats. Yeah. So, but yeah. And in the future, when you get ready to send anything else out, just make sure to get in contact with us. And if you're not able to come on, or we can't make it, we'll make sure to just share it and make people aware of it, of any further projects you have.
Awesome. Well, thanks very much for having me, guys. It was a blast.
Oh, our pleasure. Yeah. Thank you for joining us in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, no problem, man. It was fun to see your message and fun to sit down with you guys. And yeah, fund this book. Let's get to those stretch goals. I got a crazy one at, I think it's 30 grand or 25 grand. If we can get there, it's going to be nuts.
Do it.
Hey guys, I wanted to go ahead and just jump in here and talk to you all from the editing room. While editing this episode, I noticed some mic issues that on my end. Hopefully you are still able to understand and enjoy everything that was going on in this episode. I have recently actually purchased some equipment that should help with this issue that I've been having. Before we go, though, I just want to go ahead and remind everyone to go out and back this project or share it. If all you do is share, then you're greatly helping the reach of the project. We're going to go ahead and leave it there. And I hope you all had fun. And we'll see you guys next time here on Nerds from the Crypt.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.